Gift of the Father. 835.M30. 170 years before the betrayal at Istvan III. 1. The boy waited in the dark. The only light was the brief glare of a hatch opening when they brought him food. The light was bright, and he could not look at it without being blinded. After the hatch shut, he found the food by smell and ate it by touch. The light and the food were all he had to mark the passage of time in the cell. He kept count of both in his head. He had eaten 104 times and seen the light 108 times. The 4 times that the hatch had opened and no food had appeared had served no purpose that he could be certain of. Perhaps eyes had looked in at him. Perhaps it had some other meaning. Perhaps it had no meaning at all. He waited, slept, and explored the edges of the dark. The floor, walls, and ceiling were metal. Lines of rivets marked the seams between the slabs on the floor. There were 12,678 rivets. He had counted them all by touch. None of them were loose. The door had hinges only on the outside. The narrow hatch at its base was without crack or seam. The cell itself was a cube, twice the length of his body on each side. 2 small grates were set into the ceiling. A slow stream of air came from one, heavy with the smell of oil and machine fumes. The other covered a light, or at least he guessed that it did. These details never changed. The only thing that changed was the song of the walls. Sometimes the song was a low rumble, like the pulse of a machine. Sometimes the walls were silent. Sometimes they shook like the case of a chain gun as it fired. Each song came and went, sometimes lasting for an age, sometimes rising and falling away quickly. The first time the song came, he had beaten on the door and shouted. No one had come, and at last he had collapsed to the floor. When he woke next, the song had changed. He listened to it and waited. By the time he had eaten 104 times, the songs of the walls were almost all that he lived for. But they had gone silent now, and the hatch had opened 12 times since they had last sung. His latest bowl of food eaten, he fell asleep in the silence. When he woke, he was not alone. A man sat against the opposite wall. A battered metal bowl and a candle sat at his feet. A broken morsel of bread lay in the bowl. He was thin, his skin pocked by scars where smelting sparks had burned it. Black hair hung to his neck. There were patches of grey in the stubble that covered his face. He looked tired, but tough, like an old knife that was still sharp despite the notches in its blade. He looked like some of the gangers who the boy had grown up with. He looked like the home he had been taken from.
"You are not afraid," said the man, his voice rasping with pollution damage.
The boy shook his head, not sure if the man had been asking a question. The man brought up a hand and rubbed his right eye. Strands of tattooed feathers crisscrossed his fingers.
"Quite a thing, to be not afraid. Fear can be good. Keeps you alive. Keeps you sharp. But knowing what you are really afraid of, well, that is strength."
The boy looked at the man, taking in the marks which said to him that he was looking at someone who came from the Agate Vault. A gang boss, too, with both blood and power to his name.
"Why are you here?" said the boy at last.
The man shrugged.
"Why are you?"
The boy did not answer. The man picked up the bowl and held it out. The boy shook his head. The man shrugged again and put the bowl back down.
"You were in a gang, right?"
The boy hesitated and then shook his head.
"No."
The man raised an eyebrow, and the movement sent inked feathers ruffling across his skin.
"You look like you were to me."
The boy shook his head again, suddenly cold. He felt his fists tense. The man watched him for a second.
"Ah,"
said the man.
Yes, you're right. There's a difference, isn't there? Even if you ran with them, even if you took the marks and killed with them, if you kept something back, then you were not one of them.
The boy shifted, suddenly aware of the mottled burn scars on his hands and arms. The memories were suddenly bright in his head. The roar of shot cannons, the weight of knife and pistol, heavy in his hands. The gang warriors had called him Kai. He had accepted the name, just like he had accepted the food, and later the kill brands on his right hand and forearm. Those had not been marks of defeat, though. They were just the price for survival. The man gave a small smile and shook his head.
Living and not surrendering, even if those around you thought they had won. Live quick and sharp. That's right, isn't it? Give just enough and no more, and never let the pain break you.
The man nodded, his gaze steady.
Fast and quick and not afraid. What did you dream of? Never dreamed of dying? No. That would be surrender, wouldn't it? But maybe a dream of getting out of the dark and living without a knife as your pillow? Yes. That is an old dream. Old and false. Or maybe you thought that one day you could escape by being the one in charge. A few cuts here, some quick footwork there, and...
The man smiled and suddenly looked very old. Creases cut across the tattoos around his eyes.
And maybe you would have made it too. A gang of your own. A clan, even. But no one holds power forever. A bullet or a knife would have found you. And that would have been that.
They held each other's gaze, and Kai, for a second, felt very sorry for whoever the man was. There was a feeling of weight in his silence, like the pressure of unspoken moments piled up just before the present. The light of the candle somehow made the walls seem closer, but the ceiling further away, as though the walls just went up and up into the dark. If the man was a gang boss from Agate Vault, then he could have been taken at the same time as the boy. He had not seen the giants in iron take anyone else. They had just swept through the sublevels, killing as they went. The boy had outrun them for 10 days, until there was nowhere left to run to. He had tried to fight them. It had not worked, but they had not killed him. A blow from one of the giants had sent him down into the dark of this cell. The boy shook his head slowly, licked his lips and spoke.
You're not really from the same place as me, are you?
He said to the man.
You look like you are. You talk like you are. But you're here for whoever took me.
He looked up at the man, eyes hard in the flame light.
I'm right, aren't I?
The man gave a small smile.
Sharp and quick, he said, and let out a breath. But no one put me in here, and I've been to where you came from. Even if I was not born there. I've seen the turf wars down under the smelting levels. I've been there when a bullet takes someone in the eye because they were too slow or too bold or just unlucky.
The man's eyes darkened as he spoke.
You are a liar,
said the boy carefully. The man laughed and the sound ricocheted around the cell.
In a sense,
he said.
In a sense, that is exactly what I am.
What do they want? Why am I here? Why did they send you?
They want you to become something that you cannot imagine, said the man softly. And I already said that no one sent me. I'm here because I wanted to be sure my choice was right.
He looked at the boy and nodded.
Still not afraid?
No,
said the boy, and for the first time there was an edge of defiance in his voice.
Everyone is afraid of something,
said the man.
I won't submit,
growled the boy. The man smiled. A tattoo of a hound snarled on his temple as the skin folded.
That is why I chose you, Kai,
said the man. The boy froze at the sound of his name. Needles of cold ran up his skin.
How...
he began to ask, but the cell door swung open with a clank of releasing bolts. Light poured in. The boy flinched back, hands covering his eyes. Heavy steps shook the floor, and a teeth-aching purr of machine power filled the air. The boy called Kai, tried to blink away the sudden blindness in his eyes.
Stand, said a voice.
He looked up, eyes stinging, moisture running down his cheeks. A golden giant stood above him, a bladed pole in one hand and a crimson cloak falling from its back to the floor.
Stand and follow, said the giant.
The boy could feel his heart hammering in his chest.
What are you afraid of?
Kai looked down past the golden figure to the other side of the cell where the man had sat. The space was empty.
What are you really afraid of?
He stood. His head barely came up to the golden giant's midriff.
What's going to happen?
He asked, his voice strong and clear. The giant placed a hand on his shoulder. The fingers were warm, like metal left out in the sun. Kai felt the power in the giant as he was turned and guided towards the open cell door.
You are going to meet your lord, said the giant,
as they walked out of the cell and into the light beyond. 2.
Kneel, growled the golden giant from behind him.
Kai did not move.
Kneel,
came the command again. Still, he did not move. He could not. He stood in a chamber of stone and black steel. It was as large as the largest vaults that he had seen beneath the smelting levels of his home. Glow globes hung from the beams that ran across the ceiling. Each shadow glinted with polished metal and shaped stone. It was the most incredible structure Kai had ever seen. But it was not the room that froze him in place. A figure looked up from a stone table at the room's center. He was tall, taller even than the golden giant, but with a bulk that was perfectly proportioned to his size. Power flowed through his smallest movement. He wore black robes edged with white fur. Dark eyes glittered in an unsmiling face of hard edges beneath a shock of white blonde hair. Strength spread from his gaze like furnace heat. Kai had never felt anything like it before, not running into the gunfire of rival gangs, not in the time he had strayed into the grounds of the Rust Cats or leapt a crevasse.
What?
Began Kai, the question catching on his tongue.
What are you?
The golden giant began to growl a rebuke, but a glance from the figure silenced the words.
What I am is a matter that I am still coming to understand. But who I am is a question I can answer. My name is Rogel, of the House of Dawn.
Kai blinked. Every part of his being was telling him to kneel, to swear allegiance and undying loyalty to the figure who stood before him. But he did not. He brought his palm up to his mouth and bit down. The tips of his teeth opened his own skin. His blood was a brief taste of iron on his tongue. He held his hand out, squeezing it into a fist. Red ran between the knuckles. Rogel Dawn watched the blood patter onto the stone floor. His expression did not change.
You offer your blood for what? He said, and his voice was cold. As surrender? As oath?
Kai shook his head, though every fibre of his being said to run.
As defiance,
said Kai, the words thin in his dry mouth. The drops of blood from his hand were slowing, and the pain from the bite was fading into a warm numbness. Rogel Dawn's eyes were fixed, unblinking and fathomless.
You are right not to kneel, said Dawn,
and he turned away. Kai felt something cold in his chest. His arm and bloody fist dropped slowly to his side. He blinked, suddenly unsure what had happened or what he felt. Rogel Dawn stepped back to the table at the center of the room and leant on it, eyes fixed on what lay on its surface. Golden armor lay on the black stone, Each section gleamed like the flicker of candle flames. Winged creatures, similar to those on the armored giant who still stood at his shoulder, covered its plates. Kai could see talons picked out in silver. Red gems gleamed from eyes set above sharp beaks. Rogel Dorn looked at the armor for a long moment and then picked up a gauntlet. He turned it over in his hands.
"Do you know what this is?" asked Dorn,
his eyes watching the light flow over the gauntlet. He looked at Kai, who shook his head.
"It is a gift. A gift from a father to a lost son. It is also a symbol of unity, of purpose, of change."
He put the gauntlet down on the table exactly where it had been.
"I am the son, and the father, whom I did not know until now, is the master of all mankind."
Kai frowned. He did not know exactly what Rogel Dorn was talking about. He had always known that there were places above and beyond the Hive's smelting strata and the warrens beneath, but he'd never seen them. He wondered again where he was and how far he had come from those familiar places.
"Gifts such as these have meaning," said Dorn, staring at the armor and then at Kai. "I was an emperor. I ruled chains of stars. But now I am to be something else. Now I am not to rule, but to conquer so that my father can rule. That is what this gift means."
He turned to Kai.
"You are also a gift. You were marked and taken when the emperor conquered your world. You would have gone on to serve him, but now are marked to be among the first of a generation of warriors raised under my command. You are intended to be a symbol of a new age."
Kai looked up into Rogel Dorn's eyes. They were as cold and unyielding as the stone beneath their feet.
"Are you going to refuse your father?" asked Kai.
Dorn shook his head.
"No. I gave him my oath when we first met," said Rogel Dorn,
and then paused. Kai looked at his bloody hand. The blood had started to clot and bind his fingers together. He looked up.
"You should have refused," said Kai.
He could feel his limbs shaking and fought to control them. A frown passed over Rogel Dorn's brows.
"Why?"
"Because defiance is all that life is."
Dorn's silence stretched on, and then he seemed to shiver.
"There is more to life than surviving," said Dorn.
Kai began to shake his head.
"I met my father, and I knew that I was no emperor. I knew what my oath to him meant."
Dorn pointed to Kai's bloody hand.
"I said that you should not have knelt. I said that because you do not know what I am. You do not understand what you would help create."
Dorn turned and began to walk across the chamber.
"There is something for you to see."
Kai hesitated for an instant and then followed. Behind him, the silent giant in gold followed too, the haft of his spear tapping on the floor. They came to a halt beneath the center of the vaulted ceiling. Dorn looked up and gestured with a nod. Kai followed his gaze. The engraved patterns on the bronze ceiling looked back. A low rumble filled the room, and then, one by one, the panels of the ceiling slid down into the walls. Kai stared. Light. Endless points of light scattered like frozen sparks, swirls of color like patches of rust on black iron. He fell to his knees, mouth open, unable to stop staring. In part of his mind, the old stories of sky and stars came back to him, and he knew that he was not looking at a myth or dream, but truth.
"This will be the domain of mankind," said Rogel Dorn. "This will be my father's gift to humanity."
He looked down at Kai.
"That is the purpose I was made for, and why I gave my father my oath to serve him.
Kai felt weak, as though the ground had fallen away beneath him and he was falling without moving.
You will join me on that path if you wish, Kai.
He pulled his gaze away from the field of stars, swallowed and tasted the echo of his own blood in his mouth. All that mattered was that you never broke, never gave in, never let anyone take the only thing you could ever own away from you.
And if I won't, he breathed.
I'm not asking if you will give me your oath. You have a path to walk before that choice.
3. They began with pain. Deluges of pain. Pain that ate into his bones. There was no edge to it, just a sea of agony that went beyond the horizon. On and on it went, swallowing time. Seconds bled to hours. Hours collapsed to minutes. The past and future dissolved into a present that stretched and stretched. Red clouds billowed through the grey of his mind. The pain changed shape again and again, 1 second shrill as the edge of razors, the next wrapping him in fire. He could not hear. The pain had severed every other sensation from him. There was nothing left of him, just the core of torment rolling over and over through eternity. He was supposed to break. They wanted him to submit, to surrender, to let himself rise from the red ocean, clean and blank and broken. He could not remember even who they were, but that did not matter. All that mattered was that he would not let go. He would not give in. And so the pain went on. And so did he. And then it ended. He screamed at the shock. Cold blankness flooded into him, and he was flying through a void, tumbling end over end. This is death, he thought. It was not pain. It was the end of pain. It was nothing. And into the nothing came the voices. Hundreds of voices whispering as he slid on through the void, just beyond hearing. Then colour replaced darkness. Shapes compressed, folded, and expanded. Every colour he had ever seen was there, sliced into sharp slivers. Sometimes he thought he could see a pattern or recognise a shape, as though he were looking at a scene through rippling water. But then the patterns would splinter, and he would pass back into the whirlpool. Light struck his eyes. He tried to blink, but could not. The sphere of colours and shapes vanished as abruptly as the pain. The light was white, simple and bright. It stung. His eyes were watering. There were shapes moving behind the blur in front of him. Something cool touched the skin under his eyes. His sight began to clear. He tried to blink again.
Do not do that,
said a voice from just to his side.
Your eyelids are pinned open. Try to blink too hard and you will rip them.
The speaker stepped into sight. He looked like a man, but a man if he'd been shaped to a grander scale. White robes covered hard muscle. A starburst tattoo covered his bare scalp and face, and his eyes were grey and steady.
Apothecary, Kai thought,
though he did not know how he knew.
Legionis Astartes, solar privateer tattoo from pre-recruitment culture.
We will leave the pins in, said the apothecary. You will have another dose after the first implantation, and you will need your eyes open for that.
He paused, mouth closing briefly. Kai felt the grey eyes flicking across his face.
And then another dose once you are past that.
Hands came up, and Kai felt a pressure he had been ignoring release from his skull. The device that the apothecary lowered past Kai's view looked like a helm. A mass of cables and bulbous machinery clung to its dome. Dozens of lenses sat in chromed wheels above where the visor would fit over the eyes. The apothecary stood back and pressed a switch on a block of yellow plastic. The bindings holding Kai upright released, and he pitched forwards onto the floor. He lay there for a second, breathing hard. He pushed himself up onto his knees.
What's...
he began to ask, but his throat and lungs were raw.
What's your name?
The apothecary paused, looking down at him, the starburst tattoo on his face creasing.
My name is my own, and not for you.
Kai tried to spit, but his mouth was dry.
Most ask me why this is happening, said the apothecary.
Kai shook his head and forced words out of his throat.
I know why.
The apothecary raised an eyebrow.
You want to break me,
sneered Kai. The apothecary shook his head, hesitated, and then pulled him to his feet.
No,
he said, and gestured at the rest of the chamber. Rows of metal racks stretched away under a vaulted roof of frosted crystal. A human figure stood at the heart of each rack, naked, bound by loops of plastile. Helmets, like the one the apothecary had taken from Kai's head, hid their faces. Their bodies twitched as lights flickered around the edges of their visors, tubes linked to their arms and chests. Kai could see the veins standing out under the skin next to where the needles went in. He rubbed his own arm and felt the puncture wounds. Many of the figures in the racks hung slack against the restraints. Blood streaked their bare skin. Servitors in red robes and one-eyed masks moved down the rows of racks, pulling limp bodies from the restraints and dumping them onto carts.
One in 100 survives the first phase.
The ratio rose in his mind from the same place where his recognition of the apothecary and the servitors had come from. The apothecary pointed at a figure who fell from the rack as the bindings were undone. The youth was still alive, but barely. Blood ran from his mouth and his eyes were rolling. His arms and legs thrashed wildly as he tried to stand, and then struck at the servitors. One of them put a thick tube to the back of the youth's head. There was a dull thunk of pneumatic force and punctured bone. The youth collapsed, blood leaking from a neat hole in his skull.
That is what breaking looks like, said the apothecary. We don't want you to break. We want you to be unbreakable.
I won't submit, growled Kai.
The apothecary looked down at him, and there was a glimmer in his grey eyes.
Good,
he said. 4. They cut him. He was awake for most of it, and numb for some. They scooped out chunks of flesh and nested fresh organs in their place. A second heart began to beat next to the first. His blood began to change, began to thicken the faster he bled. When they had finished, the pain came back slowly until it was like a ball of barbed wire in his chest. He showed none of that pain. He knew something they did not, something that the cuts and new flesh and hypno-immersion could not touch.
You take this well, boy,
said the grey-eyed apothecary, as he examined the staples running down the centre of Kai's chest.
Some die from this, even after coming so far.
Most, said Kai.
The apothecary looked up at him, grey eyes steady. Kai stared back, unblinking.
Most die before the end of what you are doing to us.
Yes, they do, said the apothecary.
The architecture of his thoughts changed. He could feel it. Information and experience became cleaner. The gap between thought and action shrank. Pieces of emotion withered and fell away. His memories of what had happened before drifted into the distance. He could still see them, but they felt like something that was not really part of him anymore. All the while, new memories filled his head, some sharp, some blurred and smudged. He knew more than he had before, but did not know how. The machines they clamped to his head were doing this, he knew, pouring change into his mind like metal into a mould. The pain got worse, but so did his capacity for it. The pain of surgery and hypnosaturation became islands in a wide and deep ocean. Time lost meaning. Life became the passing of different agonies. He saw no one alive except pain-fogged glimpses of apothecaries. The only words he heard were the droning commands of servitors to move his limbs as they arranged him for the next phase of alteration. He did not refuse. He knew what they were doing. That was one of the first things they gave to him, the knowledge of what they were trying to make him. He let them. Death would be the only way to halt the process. But death was not victory. 5. They chained him to two others before they tried to kill him the first time. He had seen neither of the two other aspirants before. One was taller than Kai and lean, with skin the colour of rust. The other was shorter, but with brands crisscrossing his corded muscle. Both had surgical scars that matched his own. Staples marched across the base of their necks and down their chests, like chromed parasites feeding on their flesh. They all had plugs in their arms now. The chains linked them to each other by the manacles around their necks. Each chain was long enough that they could stand at arm's length from each other, but no further. The first thing that Kai had done once the servitors had finished was to test the chains. They were still warm from the welding, but did not yield. The other two watched him as he tried each link in turn.
"They will not break," said the taller of the two, his voice a low purr.
His eyes were half shut as though he was sleeping while standing.
"You should know that by now."
Kai ignored the words. He was examining the walls of the space in which they all stood. Piles of debris dotted the metal floor. A rusting forest of girders reached up to a ceiling high above them. Now that the servitors had gone, the only light was the orange glow of heat vents in the ceiling. The air was thick and hot. He knew this kind of ground. He had grown and lived and learned to kill in places that looked just like this. He gave the chain a gentle tug. He was on one end of the chain trio. The tall one was on the other end, and the one with the brand marks between them. He squinted at the manacles on the necks of the others and explored his own with his fingers. A clank echoed from the distance. Then another and another. The other two tensed, exchanged a look and slammed their shoulders together. The chains yanked Kai forwards, and he almost lost his balance. He recovered and yanked back on the chain. Something was coming. He had to get free and get moving. The other two staggered and swore.
"What are you doing?"
shouted the taller one. Something howled in the dark, and more cries answered, rolling around the red gloom. Kai looked around. He needed a weapon. If he killed the middle one, then he could cut the manacle off. But then there was the tall one. He would have to kill them both, and quickly. His eyes found a length of pipe on the edge of a heap of debris just a pace away. He just needed... The chain snapped taut and yanked him off his feet. He twisted as he fell, ready to lash out. An elbow met his face as his nose exploded into a red spray. He staggered and lashed out, but not fast enough. A hand spun him around and he was on the floor, a foot at the base of his neck, the manacle digging into his throat.
"Blood and night. He's from a fresh cohort," growled a voice from above him.
The foot stamped down on Kai's neck, snapping his face down onto the floor. He did not recognize the voice, and that meant both the voice and the foot on his neck belonged to the branded aspirant.
"You hear that, slime? That's a pack coming for us, and you are dead weight on the chain."
"Let him up! This is no time,"
snapped the tall one. The pressure did not ease on Kai's neck or throat.
"Let him up, or we're all dead anyway."
The foot came off his neck and he was pulled upright. The howls came again, closer, rolling through the gloom and echoing from the roof. The other two were not looking at him. They were looking out at the dark, at where the howls were rising. The tall one turned his head sharply, and his hands suddenly had Kai by the throat. It was fast. Kai had seen fast before, but this was something else, like the flinch of a spider.
"You want to get through this? Then you're with us," he said.
The other two were shoulder to shoulder, facing out. They had pulled metal bars out of the debris and were holding them in both hands.
"Get in formation!"
yelled the branded aspirant, and tossed Kai a metal bar. Kai hesitated. His face was still aching. The howls were rising.
"Now!"
A creature of blades and muscle bounded out of the dark. Kai had time to see a hunched body and loose skin hanging over ribs and legs. Then it was on them, steel fangs bright in a wide mouth.
"Back!"
shouted the tall one as he leapt away from the creature. Kai was slower and almost fell again. The creature landed in the space where they had been. It looked like a hairless cat. Skin hung in folds over whipcord sinew. Rusted metal scales covered its head, and its teeth and claws were shining blades. It snarled in frustration, tensed, and pounced. A length of metal bar slammed into its open mouth. Steel teeth and blood flew into the air. The beast skidded backwards, 2 paces in front of Kai.
"Kill it!"
roared a voice next to Kai's ear. The beast was rising, metal claws scrabbling at the floor. Kai lunged forwards, swinging the bar above his head with both hands. The beast looked up, yellow eyes set in scales of rusted metal. Kai slammed the bar down, once, then twice more, the impact thudding up his arm. Blood flicked across his face. The beast was a mashed ruin at his feet. He found himself suddenly aware that he was not even breathing hard.
"Eyes up! Here they come!"
Kai's gaze snapped upwards as a ripple of howls cut through the air. The other two aspirants were with him, one shoulder of each pressed against his so that they were an unbroken triangle. Then the beasts were on them, bounding out of the dark, and the world became a whirl of jaws and the reek of rotting meat breath. He swung and battered, thumping the bar into everything that moved in front of him. The beasts did not stop. They poured forwards as though driven by starvation or agony. He could feel the other two striking, but they never broke contact with him. He slammed the tip of his bar into an open mouth and kicked the body away. A brief space appeared around him, and he glanced upwards. A forest of girders was 10 paces away.
"We need to get up into the girders," he shouted. "If we stay down here, we'll die."
The words felt strange even as they left his mouth. He had been a razor in the gangs, a loner, shunned and used for his quickness. He had been marked and answered to others, but he had never been one of them. He had never had his survival depend on anything other than his own wits and reflexes. Now, by the fact of the chains around his neck, he could only live if those standing beside him lived as well.
"You lead!"
called the taller one.
Just like that, thought Kai. No questioning.
Minutes before, they had been fighting him. Now they were following his word without question. A pair of beasts bounded over the body of their kin and leapt at him. He shifted his feet, feeling the blood on the floor under his toes. One of the creatures reached for him with its claws. He pivoted and slammed the bar into the side of its skull with the full force of momentum and muscle. The beast dropped, the side of its skull a crumpled mass of metal, bone and blood. Kai leapt into the space where it had been. The other two aspirants came with him, and they battered their way into the oncoming tide. The forest of girders loomed above them. Kai was reading the best way to make the climb when a grunt of pain came from behind him. The chain yanked at his neck and he stumbled. A beast's claws flicked out. Pain exploded across his thigh. Blood sheeted down his leg. He twisted and struck the beast with a backhanded blow. The creature snarled and retreated. Kai looked over his shoulder, muscles bunching in his neck as the manacle bit deep. The tall aspirant was lying on the floor, a wide gash open down the left side of his chest. He was shaking, blood pumping in time with ragged breaths.
"Get him up!"
shouted the one with the brand scars. The chain linking him to the bleeding figure had pulled him to his knees, and he was whirling his metal bar over his head. The beasts were a wall around him, eyes and jaws pressing close. Kai hesitated. They needed to climb, and quickly. Dragging a dying body would be almost impossible.
"Oh, he's... Move!"
Kai moved. Dropping the metal bar, he gripped the wounded aspirant under the arms, lifting him onto his shoulders. The movement was strangely easy. He began to move. The branded youth was just behind him, swinging his bar in a circle. They had a second before the beasts realized they were vulnerable. Kai was at the base of a girder that met the ground at a sharp angle. He gripped the metal with one hand and used the other to steady the body across his shoulders. He could hear breath bubbling. Blood was flowing down his skin. His own wound was a dull throb at the edge of thought. He braced his feet and began to climb. He felt a brief tension in the chain, and then the other aspirant leapt from the floor and gripped the girder. The chains linking them clanked against the rusted iron. Beneath them, the beasts howled and leapt up, claws dragging sparks across the girder. Kai breathed hard. The beat of his old and new hearts rose. Blood was spattering down into the jaws of the creatures. He hauled himself up, shifting his grip and feet until he reached a crossbeam. It was narrow and rough with rust, but as its coolness touched his skin, he thought that he had never felt anything more perfect in his life. The aspirant with the branded face hoisted himself up next to Kai a second later. He was bleeding from a dozen gashes in his chest and shoulders. He looked at Kai, bloodied chest rising and falling as he sucked air.
Well, that was quick thinking, and better climbing. Where I was from, you learnt things like that fast.
A smile split the branded face.
We all came from somewhere like that,
said the aspirant with the brand marks.
I am Arcamus.
He gestured at the figure, who was half slumped on the girder across Kai's back.
And he is still alive enough to give his own name.
The figure stirred and rolled off Kai's back. His movements were weak, but the wound in his chest had sealed. Hard nodules of congealed blood gleamed in the low light. Kai glanced down at the cut in his own leg. It too had closed, and the blood began to clot.
I am Yonad, said the wounded aspirant,
his voice low and solemn.
Thank you. Thank you for my life. May I know your name?
Kai paused. He felt strange, as though he had moved into a different world without moving.
I'm called Kai, he said.
Arcamus grinned again and spat a thick gobbet of blood from between his teeth. Down below, the beasts bayed louder.
Well, get up, Kai,
said Arcamus, and began to pull himself along the girder.
We have a long way to go if we're going to reach the exit.
He moved around Kai and helped Yonad into a crouch. Kai shook his head, but Arcamus spoke before he could.
You've carried him enough for now, Kai. And besides, you should lead.
Kai looked at him for an instant, and then began to climb. Behind him, the beasts howled, and the chains linking him to the other two clinked. 6.
I will not submit!
Kai shouted, as the saw pulled back. The blood was bright on his teeth as it spun down.
I will not!
He forced the words out one after another. Machine limbs reached down, and he heard the crack as they pulled his ribcage open. Above him, the grey eyes of the apothecary looked down from behind the mechanical arms.
Why?
Said the apothecary, his voice echoing from a speaker in his collar. Kai could feel the pain coming again. He was always awake when they operated now. Always awake and never numb. Needles twitched in his arms and neck. He could feel his body fighting to suppress the pain and staunch the flow of blood. But there was too much pain and too much blood. Too much, but not enough that it would release him from its hold.
I asked you a question, aspirant, said the apothecary.
Kai,
he hissed.
My name is Kai.
Is that why you will not submit? For pride?
Another set of machine arms swung into view above him. A tubular lump of grey flesh hung from the machine's chrome fingers. A web of blood vessels hung from it.
Can you remember why you resist?
I...
began Kai, and reached for the memories and feelings that lived behind his defiance.
He would not submit. He would not break. He would not bow. He would not...
and found nothing. He did not know why he would resist, only that he would.
I do not remember,
he said, eyes snapping back into focus to see the arms luring the grey lump of flesh into his chest.
Strength does not require reasons, said the apothecary.
7. Kai hung in silence and dreamed the dreams of two worlds. In one world, his mind was asleep, his thoughts tumbling down through echoes of compressed memories. In the other world, his eyes watched the corridor junction, his thoughts moving with the same slow beat as his blood. His eyes were open, and they twitched as though seeing things move in front of him. But there was nothing in front of him, just three long dark corridors. He had been like this for 56 hours, half of them fully awake, the other half split between the waking and sleep that he could now enter at will.
Kai?
Yonad's voice fizzed inside his ear.
Kai, respond if you can hear.
His eyes stopped twitching, and he blinked rapidly. He had to bite down on the instinct to vomit as his dreams meshed with a waking world that he could already see. The pressure of the void suit was a sudden sensation on his skin, and he felt his hearts begin to thump faster.
I hear you,
he said.
Confirm status, said Yonad. Steady at intersection 21. No movement, just like before.
They are out there,
said Arcamus, his voice a growl over the voxlink.
They are coming. Did that rust pit of a hive you were born in not teach you patience?
Oh, it did. But somehow it failed to make me enjoy floating in the vacuum, waiting for an unknown enemy to appear,
said Kai. Arcamus laughed, the sound a quick bark that settled back into quiet.
They might not be coming,
said Kai at last. The thought had been itching away at him every time he came out of a split-sleep cycle.
Well, that is not the way things are done,
came Yonad's measured tones.
If we are here, then so is the enemy. What if that is not the lesson?
Asked Kai, shifting to stare down one of the three passages. Cables dangled from crumpled inspection hatches, and pipes hung from ducts like severed blood vessels. They were in a damaged region of a transport bark, which had been left open to the void. There were other trios of aspirants scattered throughout the structure. Each had a different mission, but none knew where the other trios were, or the details of their missions. Kai, Arcamus, and Yonad were watching a cluster of dead passages. All of them were skinned in armored void suits, and armed with shot cannons and chain blades.
What do you mean?
Growled Arcamus. Kai took a careful breath before answering. The Inuit-born youth could switch in temperament from jovial to abrupt anger in the space of a heartbeat. The alterations being made to his mind and body had not dulled that quality. If anything, his temper had become more marked.
What if waiting is the wrong thing to do? What if there is no threat, and the only thing holding us here is that we think there is a threat?
No, Kai,
said Yonad, speaking before Arcamus could.
We have a task, and we will see it done. But what is the mission?
Asked Kai. He turned to look down the second passage. The movement spun him over, and he had to grab hold of the tether attaching him to the wall to steady himself. The second corridor was empty, just like the first.
What if we've not understood it correctly?
Kai,
began Yonad, but Arcamus cut in.
And what do you mean?
I mean, there might be no enemy here. They might be somewhere else, somewhere that's struggling because we're held here by fear.
This is duty, not fear, said Yonad.
Is it?
Snapped Kai, before he could stop himself. He regretted the words as soon as they were out of his mouth. He had noticed that happening more and more recently. Emotions and impatience would bubble up out of nowhere. It was like another person was living in his thoughts, someone with cold edges and hot bile. He had no idea why.
I'm sorry,
he began to say.
Enough, said Yonad. We are brothers. You need say nothing more. Just never say such a thing again.
Kai swallowed and nodded, even though no one could see him do it. Brother. The word was still as strange an addition to his world as the organs stitched into his flesh.
And perhaps he's right, said Arcamus. We've not heard anything, and the command channel is static. We're too scattered. Even if that was the ordered formation, we are exposed. We could link up with each other and form a trio. If it is clear up to the core bulkhead, we can form a core defense.
No,
said Yonad, his voice hard.
We stay. If we start second-guessing...
Kai,
said Arcamus,
I'm going to move towards you. Try not to shoot me when you see me.
Yonad hissed something in the language of his birth world. Kai didn't understand the words, but he didn't need to.
Detaching tether and moving now,
called Arcamus. Kai turned so that the passage Arcamus would come down was at the edge of his sight. He kept focused on the others. After a few moments, a light flickered in the far darkness of the passage.
Nothing here, said Arcamus. Unsurprising.
I do not like this,
hissed Yonad. Kai could hear the tension in the words. He was suddenly not sure that he should have voiced his thoughts about changing the battle plan.
Oh, victory comes from suffering,
said Arcamus, the edge of laughter back in his voice now.
I can see your suit lights, Kai. Closing on your position.
Oh, confirmed,
said Kai, and glanced back up the tunnel to where the light was bobbing closer. I can see yours too.
I don't have my lights on, said Arcamus.
Kai heard the words and felt them slide cold over his skin. He turned. The light closing towards him was accelerating. He brought his shot cannon up. Blinding light flicked down the passage towards him. He pulled the trigger. The cannon roared. The gun's recoil spun him over in the weightless dark and saved his life. A bolt of energy skimmed his upper arm. Fabric and rubber flashed to vapor. Flakes of burning material peeled away. The tether connecting him to the wall snapped tight, and he was tumbling over and over. Pain burned in his right arm. Air vented from the hole in his suit. A pressure loss alert began to ring in his ears. The wall slammed into him, and he caught it before he rebounded. His shot cannon was still in his left hand. The pain in his right shoulder exploded as he pulled himself against the metal plates. Bolts of energy flashed past him. He could see the light now. It was not one light, but four, closely bunched, moving in jumps through the black. He had an impression of bronze plating and steel limbs. He fired again. The cannon flashed. Force slammed through him, but this time he was braced for it. The lead light went out. Air was streaming out of his suit. He could hear it, a low hiss in the silence. A line of energy burned into the wall next to him. He fired again and again, switching the angle of fire to send the scattershot ricocheting off the walls. Another light went out. Something flashed at the edge of his eye, and he glanced to his side where the other corridors led off into the dark. Lights were moving towards him down both passages.
Brothers!
He shouted the word, as he fired a scattershell down each passage. The recoil almost sent him spinning again.
I'm almost with you!
Yelled Arcamus.
I'm moving,
said Yonad. Kai fired again, rebounding from shot to shot. He could see the servitors now. They crawled over the walls like spiders. Articulated metal limbs moved in place of arms and legs, and their heads bent upwards on necks of ribbed steel. Weapon pods projected from their spines like scorpion stings, and there were dozens of them.
I see you,
came Arcamus's voice.
I have clear targets.
The flare of gunfire lit the distant passage, blinking as shrapnel tore through the vacuum. Kai grinned, sudden joy blotting out the pain of his arm. He had felt it before and knew it. This was the warrior's song singing in his veins, the joy of feeling death reach for him and shouting back into its face. He braced and fired again, three shots, four explosions of flesh and metal. He glanced over his shoulder. Arcamus was 10 meters away, wedged between the wall and a block of machinery. He was firing at the servitors closest to Kai.
Well,
shouted Arcamus over the vox.
At least we found the enemy.
Kai laughed and turned to fire again. A flash of energy burned out of the dark, and the world ripped away like a banner blown into the night sky.
8. He woke to cold light. Numbness held his body.
You are persistent,
said a voice from just out of sight.
I will give you that.
The grey-eyed apothecary stepped into view.
Lucky even. An aspirant with your injuries would normally be allowed to die, or be made into a servitor. But it seems that fortune is on your side.
Kai took a breath and felt fluid rasp in his throat.
Arcamus!
He hissed.
Yonad!
The other two in your trio. One dead, one alive.
The words sank through him, cold in the sea of his numbness. The apothecary watched him, unblinking.
Which one?
Asked Kai at last. The apothecary raised an eyebrow.
Which one died?
The one who was closest to you when you were hit. I do not know the name. He was caught out of position and overwhelmed.
Arcamus, thought Kai.
It is not just the weak in body that we winnow out, said the apothecary. It is those who are flawed in thought, he was not strong enough to become what he needed to be, and so he fell.
It was me, said Kai. He should have been in position. It was me that wanted to alter it.
Then he died for your weakness, said the apothecary, and moved away, leaving Kai with the words echoing in his thoughts.
9. He lay in the dark and felt the ghosts of his lost limbs. Shivers of pain ran down his right arm from shoulder to fingertip. He could feel his right leg ache when he lay still. The energy blast had vaporized his arm from just above the elbow and scooped a chunk of bone and flesh from his torso. A second blast had struck his knee. To simplify the fitting of the bionics, they had removed the remaining flesh and bone up to his shoulder and hip. When they had first fitted the bionics, he would stare at the bronzed pistons and wires of his new limbs and feel another set of fingers and muscle twitch somewhere within the unmoving metal. Now he lay in the dark of his cell and waited, clenching his right fist, one digit at a time.
What are you afraid of?
The words came again, along with the face of the man who he had seen in his cell.
What are you really afraid of? He will ask you.
The darkness did not answer. The door to his cell opened. Light fell across him, bright and golden. His eyes adapted instantly to the change in illumination.
It is time, said the figure by the door.
He did not recognize the voice, but the size and the purr of active power armor told him enough. Once he would have thought the figure a giant, but as he stood, their eyes were on a level. The plugs in his spine still itched, but he no longer even thought of the hard black carapace under his skin, or the beat of his second heart, or the channels that his thoughts flowed down. Only the question, asked by a man who had not been there, to a boy who was no longer there, tugged at his calm. What are you afraid of? He stepped towards the door. The warrior came into focus. He wore yellow and black battle plate, draped with a white circuit. A sheathed sword hung at his waist, and his face was as cold and unmoving as carved ice. The warrior gestured for Kai to go in front of him, and they began to walk down the long corridor. The doors of the cells on either side remained closed. It took them an hour to reach the arming chamber. There, the serfs gave him his final skin. His nerves buzzed as the armor activated. He remained silent, and the yellow and black armored warrior watched him without blinking. When it was done, they put his bolter in his hands. The ready lights on the casing lit as his fingers curled around the grip.
Fully loaded, he noted. Now I truly am the weapon they have made me.
A tremor of ghost pain flared in his right arm, and he had to clamp down on it. He looked at the other warrior.
I'm ready, he said.
The warrior nodded and led him onwards. 10. There were 20 of them. 20 in burnished yellow armor, their bolt guns held across their chests, their heads bare. Kai saw Yonad as he fell into position. Their gazes touched and slid away from each other. They had trained together since Arcamus had fallen, but had only talked in abrupt bites of tactical information. Kai understood why. What was there to say? An open archway waited before the 20. Two warriors stood to either side of the doorway, drawn swords resting point down at their feet. Both warriors wore white circuits crossed with black. Coals burned in iron braziers clamped to the door's pillars, but the chamber beyond was dark, as though the door led to oblivion. They waited, and a light appeared in the dark beyond the door. A flame flickered to life, grew and reached upwards. From where Kai stood, the fire seemed to hang in the dark.
Approach and enter, said one of the warriors by the door.
The 20 walked forwards and crossed into the blackness beyond. The chamber grew in the light of the fire at its center. Black granite pillars rose to a shadowed height, the light strong enough to give only an impression of a dome ceiling. The walls were bare, the stone smooth and unblemished.
Black iron poles jutted from the upper reaches of the walls. The whole space felt empty, as though it were waiting. The 20 formed a broken circle around the flames, which burned in a wide bowl set on a frame of brushed copper. They all watched the yellow tongues as they reached up into the air.
"Welcome."
The voice rolled through the air, echoing off the bare stone. Kai recognized it, though it had been a long time since he had last heard it. Rogel Dorn stepped from the dark. He looked around the circle of 20, his eyes catching the light of the fire.
"One day, the names of every warrior of the Legion will line these walls, and the banners of victory will hang above the heads of those who stand where you stand now."
He paused, turning his gaze to meet that of the 20.
"But you will be the first. You have brothers already scattered across the stars, tens of thousands of warriors who fight the war that you will join. In time, all of them will come here and make their oaths. But you are the first. The first to become warriors of my flesh and blood since I took a place at my father's side. 20. 20 from thousands. 20 with the strength to reach this point."
He nodded carefully.
"I know you all. Every detail of your path here. I have watched you. I have seen your strength and will. But..."
He paused, and Kai felt as though Dawn's words and presence were wrapping around him alone, as though he were the focus of a lens, as though his skin were charring under the light of a sun.
"You will need greater strength and greater will than that which has brought you this far. You are warriors in a war to change existence. Our great crusade does not serve vanity or pride. It serves mankind. Illumination, the light of reason, and freedom from the dark. That is what we bring. That is my father's gift to the galaxy. We exist to see mankind fulfill a destiny where the savagery that we were raised from is lost to memory. Humanity has a destiny. We are not that destiny, but we will be its creators. There is no higher purpose, no greater meaning to our lives than this task. If it demands our suffering, we will bear that pain. If it demands our lives, then we will go to our deaths knowing that we die for the future. If victory demands eternity from us, then we will give it. We will do all this and never flinch from the path, never doubt, never turn away from the truth, or from each other."
Dawn stared into the fire, and for a second Kai thought he could feel the heat of it reflecting from the Primarch's gaze.
"The oaths you make today are to me, and through me to the Emperor, and through the Emperor to the future of all humanity. Remember them. Carry them in your breath and blood. They are everything."
Dawn stepped up to the fire and raised his right arm. The gauntlet snapped free from his hand. He clenched his fingers and thrust his fist into the flames. Kai watched them envelop the bare flesh.
"Come," said Dawn. "Make your oath."
They stepped forwards one at a time and thrust their fists into the flames. The smoke of charring skin rose as they spoke their names and the words of the oath. None of them flinched or showed any sign of pain. Dawn kept his hand in the flame throughout, his features showing nothing, his eyes focused on each of the warriors as they came forwards. Then Kai felt himself step up, his left gauntlet releasing. He clenched his fingers into a fist and met Rogel Dawn's eyes.
"Do you wish to give me your oath now, Kai?" asked the Primarch.
For answer, Kai thrust his hand into the flames. There was a fraction of a second, and then heat swallowed every sensation in his fingers.
"I will give you my oath,"
he said. He could feel the gaze of the other 20 on him. "But the name that goes with that oath will not be Kai." Silence echoed in the temple, and he could feel the shock ripple through the other warriors, like the passing of a wave through deep water. Rogel Dorn's expression did not alter, but Kai thought he saw something flicker in the depths of his eyes, a shadow cast by flamelight.
"What are you afraid of?" said Dorn softly.
"That others will die for my weakness. That I will fail," said Kai.
The skin of his hand was peeling away now, the sinew and flesh beneath blistering and charring. The pain had become blades of ice cutting into his finger bones. He kept his hand utterly still and held Dorn's gaze. The moment went on, extending in eternal seconds.
"There is always fear, even if we give it another name," said Dorn at last.
"I know, Lord."
Dorn held his gaze for a second more.
"What name would you have?"
"Arcamus," he said. "My oath name will be Arcamus."
"So be it," said Rogel Dorn.
Then he opened his hand, reached through the fire, and grasped the charring hand of his son.
"So be it,"